looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
It has been a long fight in the United Methodist Church. There has been foment for the acceptance of homosexuality there for decades, and there has been that silent attempt on the part of individual pastors to get around what remains in the world of mainline Protestantism, an outlier. The United Methodist Church, against all odds and expectations in some ways, continues, at least on paper, to consider homosexual behavior intrinsically sinful. That doesn't stop pastors within its pale from engaging in homosexual behavior themselves or of solemnizing same-sex marriages. We're going to get a picture of what's going on there as the news breaks of academic leaders from almost 100 institutions tied to Methodism calling on the bishops of the United Methodist Church to accept homosexual behavior. Joining us to discuss this, John Lomparis. He's United Methodist Director for the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington. John, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to be back, Todd.
What are Duke President Vincent Price and the presidents of 92 other schools associated in one way or another with the Methodist Church calling for the United Methodist Church to do?
They're essentially calling for the United Methodist Church, which is America's second largest Protestant denomination, to get with the program of how American secular culture has changed and to repeal our longstanding rules that forbid our clergy from engaging in homosexual practice or from performing same-sex unions. And there will be an opportunity for possible change to these standards or possible reinforcement of them at the St. Louis, General Conference of the United Methodist Church that will be meeting next week. And that's the only body that has the authority to change our governing book of discipline. I will actually be a voting delegate there in St. Louis.
How strongly are these schools associated with the United Methodist Church?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that when it benefits them, they do sometimes like to play it off, and it will vary. I mean, there is obviously any college or university to stay in business. It needs customers like any other business, and so they sometimes will play up the connection to the United Methodist Church so that kids in United Methodist youth groups and churches will be encouraged to go to a United Methodist school, thinking it would be a nurturing Christian environment. But once they get there, as a recent article in First Things said, the reality is that, and this is a quote from the First Things article, that these U.S. colleges that Methodists founded during the 19th century are indistinguishable in culture from their secular counterparts. And while these schools might have a chapel on site, for the most part, that is true from what I've seen.
What does the United Methodist Church's Book of Discipline currently say about homosexual activity?
We say that all people are loved by God and we are welcome in our churches, and that if just because somebody comes out as gay, that's not a reason to reject that person from our families or from our communities. At the same time, when it comes to personal practices, we do believe that the practice of homosexuality is inherently sinful, and we teach that marriage is only between one man and one woman. And in terms of binding policies, our clergy are required to either be faithful in a marriage between one man or one woman or be celibate. And our clergy are also forbidden from performing, and our congregations are forbidden from hosting same-sex union ceremonies.
So give us a brief history of this issue in the United Methodist Church.
Well, I mean, through obviously in the early days of our history, this was not as prominent an issue. You can go back to the writings of John Wesley, where in passing, he does very clearly indicate the marriages between a man and a woman and very clearly expresses disapproval of homosexual practice. So that's been a part of our theological heritage from the beginning, but it was really only with the rise of the gay rights movement in this country, in the United States, in the late 60s, that there was pressure of churches for how to respond to some of these new claims. And so in 1972, there was a statement added to the Book of Discipline to say that that was for the first time to talk about homosexuality in an official way, more in a direct and extended way. And it said that, again, that we welcome all people and we believe in civil and human rights for all people, but the practice of homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teaching. And over the next couple of decades, there was each of the provisions I mentioned before was added in a piecemeal kind of way. Then they added something saying that clergy had to be celibate in singleness or faithful in marriage. And then some people were saying, well, that doesn't apply to gay clergy for some reason. So then there was a separate requirement saying, you know, gay clergy, if they're going to be, they have to be celibate. And then there was something added saying we can't do same-sex unions. But while all those requirements were being added, you had often quietly a number of people in clergy and aided and supported by some bishops in more liberal regions of the church had been breaking these standards pretty blatantly. And then within the last few years, some of that disobedience that had been really been going on for a number of years has really come out into the open in a very public way. And there is kind of this hope of activists that are breaking the rules that, well, if enough of us are breaking the rules at once, they're not going to be able to hold all of us accountable. And our denomination has felt a bit paralyzed by this crisis of disobedience to our standards. And so at the last general conference, tensions were high around these issues, but there was, long story short, a call to defer all debates over homosexuality, to not deal with them at the regularly scheduled 2016 conference that I was also a delegate at, and instead just deal with all the other churches' business and then refer all these controversies to a special commission and see if the commission can work out a way forward for us. And now the proposals, competing proposals from this Way Forward Commission are coming to be voted on by largely the same group of delegates and a specially called session of our general conference.
So then, if you would, how would you, as a way of comparison, compare what's happened in other mainline churches, because the United Methodist Church is that one of those seven sisters, the other mainline churches that have capitulated on this very issue?
Yes, I mean, I think, the American Baptists are a bit of a interesting case with in terms of the Seven Sisters, but with regard to the other mainline denominations, all of them have within the last couple decades taken significant steps to all the rest of them to basically shift away from biblical teaching regarding marriage and sexuality. And the United Methodist Church has been an outlier. And sometimes you hear people try to say, oh, well, momentum is on the liberal side because, you know, it's been like the dominoes falling. First, the Episcopal Church did this thing, and then the UCC did this thing, and then the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America moved in this way, so where next? But if you actually look at the votes of our General Conference, which is our governing denominational assembly, the votes have actually been moving in a more conservative direction.
John Lomparis is our guest, United Methodist Director for the Institute on Religion and Democracy. We're talking about the call of academic leaders for the acceptance of homosexuality in the United Methodist Church. When we come back, does it help that the United Methodist Church is an international denomination?
Who is your neighbor? And what does it mean to love your neighbor as yourself? This February, the Lutheran Witness is exploring what it looks like when Lutherans show God's love to neighbors in need. Highlights include one church's dramatic account of weathering Hurricane Michael and the profile of an LCMS-recognized service organization serving the poorest of the poor in rural Appalachia. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Solid. serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're discussing academic leaders' call for acceptance of homosexuality in the United Methodist Church. John Lomparis is our guest. You can join us for the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. The speaking lineup includes Pastor Matt Harrison, Ross Douthat, Aaron Wolf, Wesley Smith, Pastor Hans Feeney, and Pastor Will Whedon. Early bird registration before April 1st is $115, and that includes meals Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. You can find out more and register at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385. It's the one and only Making the Case Conference this year, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. John, given all the pressure that's coming within the United States for the bishops to accept homosexuality in the United Methodist Church, does it help that the United Methodist Church is an international denomination?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We might be in a different place if we were a U.S.-only denomination, but the fact is that we are over 40% of our membership is outside of the United States, and that is of that over 40%, that's overwhelmingly in sub-Saharan Africa. There's also some in the Philippines and then smaller numbers in the Middle East and Eastern and Western Europe. And with the exception of Western European United Methodists, of whom there are very, very few, United Methodists in the other regions, with some exceptions, tend to be overwhelmingly Orthodox and traditionalists on these sorts of issues. And there have been all sorts of ways in which the liberal American denominational establishment has sought to kind of control and limit and prevent these non-American delegates from having a proportionate voice in church affairs, but they've been increasingly vocal, and that's been extremely helpful. But it's not only because of the Africans, that also if you look at the concentration of where American United Methodists are compared to, say, the United Church of Christ or other mainline denominations, that American United Methodists do tend to meet more in conservative regions of the country, and there is a trend where we see graduates of more evangelical seminaries are doing much more to actually grow our churches than graduates of more liberal seminaries. Obviously, with something as broad as that, there's exceptions, but that is the general trend.
You have mentioned this, but there are progressive United Methodist pastors who are quietly performing same-sex marriages, congregations that are putting up with that. And then there are also openly gay United Methodist Church pastors. How can and should the United Methodist Church respond?
We have clear processes and clear standards in our discipline, which all these clergy engaging in these sorts of things, it's not like anybody's being ambushed. They all knew what they were signing up for. The problem is that there's often a lack of willpower to do so. And so I and other delegates at this general conference are supporting a proposal called the Modified Traditional Plan. And the Modified Traditional Plan would basically close, among other things, close some key loopholes in church law that would basically, on the one hand, offer a gracious exit to people that feel they cannot in good conscience abide by our denomination's orthodox standards on sexuality. And the point of gracious exits is really, we've looked at what's happened in the Episcopal Church and the Presbyterian Church USA, where the denomination goes one way on sexuality, but there's a significant minority, then they feel they need to leave, and then they end up having these ugly, scandalous lawsuits of former fellow church members actually suing each other over church property, even, and then, you know, the denomination will sometimes go through all this legal trouble, even if it's just to keep a building that's empty and they can't use it. And we really do want to avoid that in our church. So the modified traditional plan will offer a gracious exit to congregations and even entire regions and clergy who feel they could not in good conscience abide by our standards, saying we're not going to, you know, go after you or be punitive. We'll find a way to pardon as amicably as possible under the circumstances. But at the same time, if you do stay in our denomination, we're not going to keep having chaos and anarchy in our church. And there are going to be some clear closing of the loopholes that have been exploited previously, so that if people insist on still violating our standards while remaining United Methodist clergy, there will be consequences and they won't be allowed to continue.
What is the one church plan, and would it, as it claims, somehow find compromise on this issue while preserving unity in the United Methodist Church?
Yes, well, I have seen a lot of different false advertising in my lifetime, but the one church plan is one of the greatest examples of misleading false advertising I've seen. That it is a plan that would essentially look at the same liberal policies that split apart the Episcopal Church and split apart the Presbyterian Church USA and the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and it would get the United Methodist Church to go significantly further than the policies that split those other denominations, and then at the same time have the audacity to claim that somehow that is a path to bring unity. That is actually the one plan that is most guaranteed of all possibilities to cause a major split and split us apart. Like the other denominations' plans, the one church plan would remove the restrictions on clergy performing same-sex union ceremonies, and it would also, with some variation, really limit and roll back the restriction on pastors engaging in homosexual practice. It would allow some local regions of the church to say, at least temporarily, that we're not going to ordain any new people that are refusing to uphold the traditional standards in terms of abstaining from homosexual practice. But even then, it would basically remove any legal basis anywhere for us to be able to discipline a clergy person who is already ordained and comes out as having a gay partner. Right now, if a clergy person comes out as saying, I have been in the closet, but I have a gay partner, they could be face all kinds of discipline and likely, according to church law, should be removed from office if they refuse to repent. But under the one church plan, for all parts of the church, that restriction would be removed. So that would be a pretty radical step. And another radical step would be the fact that if a local congregation says that it is unacceptable for them to have a pastor who is in a same-sex partnership or who is known to perform homosexual union services, because in our system the bishop sends congregations a pastor, congregations would have no right to say we cannot accept that. And so conservative congregations would not really have a safe or protected space to continue existing within the United Methodist Church.
What can the United Methodist rank and file lay people, especially those who will be going, as yourself, to the special session of the General Convention in St. Louis, what can they do on this issue?
I encourage people to find out who the delegates are from their respective area. Our regions are called annual conferences. It's good for our delegates to hear from people in the pews that the one church plan, despite its name, would actually be really disastrous for our churches. And the modified traditional plan is the only plan that could bring us any kind of unity worth having. But especially at this late point, it's just very important to please pray for delegates to see through some of the misinformation that's been spread around. Pray for the general conference to be run in a way that is orderly and fair and allows us to make a decisive decision rather than kicking the can down the road. And pray that both faithfulness and graciousness would prevail in the values that the majority of delegates will ultimately vote to enact.
John Lomperis is United Methodist Director for the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to the Institute on Religion and Democracy under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. John, thanks.
Thanks, Todd.
So a family in your congregation has just had a new baby. They don't come to church except Christmas Eve, just one day a year. They are asking to have the new baby baptized. How should your pastor respond? Thursday on Issues Etc., we're going to continue our series on pastors and their people applying the Bible to the life of the church. We'll talk about that scenario with Pastor Randy Asbury and Pastor William Turgeson. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.